Welcome to another edition of Eye on the Peninsula Current Affairs this Tuesday, the 26th of April. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham. Great to have your company. The federal government and its ministers are in election mode after the Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull announced the federal election date as the 2nd of July 2016. Today, Eye on the Peninsula focuses on the upcoming election as our reporters catch up with Environment Minister Mr. Greg Hunt, Deputy Leader of the Opposition and Foreign Affairs Shadow Minister Tanya Plibersek, and the ALP candidate for Dunkley, Ms. Peter Murphy. There is an increase in community unrest and anger with the Andrews government's Skyrail proposal. Ray Reid has an update on the dilemma in the Seaford-Edith Vale area and its stations. And lastly, what $10 to $15 million can do for the township of Hastings with a new tourist attraction. But we begin with this. Federal Government Minister Greg Hunt is excited about the agreement between Melbourne University and the Andrews government. Minister Hunt handed over $2.1 million of federal funds to the state government towards the agreement as part of the National Environment Science Program to set up the Point Nepean Research Centre at the old quarantine site. He spoke to Deborah Maher about the agreement.
So what we've got here is a three-way agreement between the Commonwealth of State and the University of Melbourne. It's about the vision for a portion of the old quarantine station, empty but existing building, being used for a national centre for coastal climate. The formal position is that the State of Victoria and the University of Melbourne have signed what's called a Memorandum of Understanding, and that is that Melbourne University will be a preferred user subject to the final master plan outcome, but a preferred user for a proportion of the buildings. And then Melbourne University, in response, will set up a national centre for coastal climate. It will look at coastal revegetation issues, coastal management, climate change issues. Its goal is to create one of the world's great oceanographic research centres here on the Mornington Peninsula, and to provide degrees for the first time within the Mornington Peninsula Shire, rather than diplomas or certificates, so you know, a degree-giving institution. And so we become a centre of global marine and climate research, and for local residents, using the existing building, $2.1 million of federal money to bring life to them and degree opportunities for local students.
Some community groups would question the necessity to redevelop the old quarantine site. Minister Hunt argued the point as to why the old quarantine site is the right area to set up the research centre as part of the Point Nepean Master Plan.
Why set up the centre down there on the quarantine site?
Well, the first thing is to make sure that we get the best use out of that site. Again and again and again, everybody has talked about making use of those buildings rather than trying to hive them off for apartments, which I've opposed all along, or to leave them abandoned and derelict. Now, we've put in $50 million of federal money to upgrade, to improve the land, to make sure that the buildings are in excellent condition. They're still empty, though. And so you have this ghost town that's a physical precinct. It's far better to have it as a living heritage case where if we can have a museum facilities, and we also have university facilities, that's just a fabulous outcome for the peninsula and research.
Greg Hunt has strong views why the quarantine station should be redeveloped. He believes it is good for the region, but does everyone agree?
There have been discussion papers put out to the community. Do you know where we are with that?
Well, I think we're now on our fifth set of planning, and all previous ones have said marine research to use these buildings for that. There's an overwhelming community consensus. I can't say that everybody would support it. Some people would support apartment buildings. Some would say they're against this, but then struggle to say what they're for. But overwhelmingly, everybody's for it. And my view and position all along has been to strive and to fight and to work to make sure that for the first time we have marine research. And the fact that this brings one of the world's great universities, one of the world's top-ranked universities, to have a footprint on the peninsula is just a fabulous outcome.
So we'll be able to employ more people, and it will make it a real hub down there for the people. What would you say to the community who actually don't want any further development down there on the old quarantine site?
At the moment, it's abandoned and empty. And the BNPA put forward a proposal after much consultation with us a decade ago for what they call a living heritage precinct. I think everybody, when they've actually been asked, what would you do with the building, says, well, we'd like some sort of heritage and some sort of university. The alternatives are really threefold. You break it up, which I oppose bitterly, for housing. That's the original defence proposal 14 years ago was to do that, and I fought with every breath against that. You leave it abandoned or you use it. And then within the use of a ghost town, an existing set of heritage buildings around the country, the best examples of using heritage buildings is to bring life to them again. It's been a pleasure working with the state to get the outcome.
Minister Hunt understands concerns that the community has with regard to the protection of the existing flora and fauna on the site. His ministry is actively funding the protection of the environment to ensure it remains sustainable for generations to come.
The fauna and flora that is down there, that will be looked after, because we know we have some beautiful echidnas and all sorts of different plants down there that we do want to protect. How we propose to do that and the funding for that?
We put $50 million into rehabilitating the land and into rehabilitating the building. I think we need to draw a complete distinction between Point Nepean, which is a park in state hand, and the old quarantine station, which has the best part of 100 buildings, was a small city. It exists. It's an area which has been rehabilitated, but is bizarrely like a ghost town. You walk through the park, and it's magnificent and in great condition, and the Commonwealth rehabilitated it. And then you walk through the quarantine station area, which is was a quarantine station. It was a military base. It has this long history. Then it was allowed to fall into disrepair. We've rehabilitated it. Now it's about using the buildings. I think we've now found something which for 100, 200 years will be the ultimate sustainable use. Research into the marine environment and climate change, bringing world-class researchers and a really sustainable use to the area. I think it's just something in 20 and 30 and 40 years' time we'll look at and say, wow, what a great outcome.
Everyone is talking about the upcoming federal election announced last week. Minister Hunt has many plans to spend federal funds on the Mornington Peninsula, including the Rosebud Hospital, the Forest Drive and Nepean Highway intersection at Mount Martha, and the protection of owner truck driver businesses.
How are you feeling about the upcoming election?
Oh, look, I feel good. I never take anything for granted. You always have to earn the right and the trust of the people on the peninsula and throughout the area at a personal level, and then at a national level to earn their trust. But in the end, it's about the big task of making sure we're being responsible intergenerational managers and not stealing funds from the next generation. And then locally, we're going after a rebuild and upgrade of Rosebud Hospital from 60 to 150 beds to really work with and fight for and to push the state to get there. And to, you know, if they do that, I'm very confident we'll be able to bring federal funds to work on things such as the Forest Drive upgrade at the intersection in Mount Martha. So a whole series of different things up and down the area.
Prime Minister doing a good job, do you think?
Yes, I do. We've just seen this week the passage of the legislation to protect owner drivers. We were going to see, and we have lots and lots of these owner drivers trucks on the Mornington Peninsula. We were going to see them literally pushed to the wall, and this was an existential threat to a whole section of small business in our community. So it's an incredible thing, and I think that legislation that went through this week was extremely important.
Well, fingers crossed, I think, Minister. We'll all come out on the 2nd of July. Thank you so much for your time. We'll leave it there.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.
Minister Hunt there discussing plans between Melbourne University and the Andrews government for the building of the Point Nepean Research Centre as part of the redevelopment of the old quarantine station. It's worth mentioning too that any proposal for the Nepean Research Centre is still subject to the community consultation process that will inform the Point Nepean master plan. Apologies for the audio being a little hard to hear. Mr. Hunt was in his car between meetings.
This is 98.7, 98.3 RPPFM.
In Labor's 2014 election platform, it stated that, one, Labor will build a world-class public transport system in Victoria, frequent, convenient, reliable, affordable and safe. Two, Labor will embark on a plan to transform our roads and public transport system to create 10,000 construction jobs. And three, that they have to work to find solutions they believe are appropriate for each and every of the 50 crossings identified to be removed. This week, the government announced the signing of contracts with a consortium of contractors to build a SkyTrain, also known as SkyRail, on the Dandenong-Pakenham line, which has been met with much criticism. However, it appears certain now that the new project will go ahead on that line. Now there is a preemptive fear campaign suggesting that a SkyTrain will also be built on the Frankston line.
This is the sound that has been heard in 50 level crossings in Melbourne that is now being replaced by alternative methods to remove trains from these crossings. Apart from the noise, the traffic delay caused by these crossings, especially during peak hour, was intrusive at best. Change has already started, and that noise on the 50 crossings identified will be gone forever. In Labor's 2014 election platform, it stated that Labor will build a world-class public transport system for Victoria, frequent, convenient, reliable, affordable, and safe. Labor will embark on a plan to transform our roads and public transport system and create 10,000 construction jobs. And work they have to find solutions that they believe are appropriate for each and every of the 50 crossings identified to be removed. The Burke Road crossing has already been removed. Nine other crossing projects are in construction. Nine are up for tender. 15 are in the consulting and detailed planning stage, and 16 are at the early planning and engineering assessment stage. 11 crossings have been identified to be changed on the Frankston line. Works have already commenced to remove three level crossings at North Road in Ormond, McKinnon Road in McKinnon, and Centre Road in Bentley. Planning is underway to remove the following eight crossings: Charman Road in Cheltenham, Balcombe Road, Mentone, Edith Vale, Station Street and Bondi Roads in Bond Beach, Station Street, Carrum, Illrace Road, Seaford, Seaford Road, Seaford, Skye and Overton Roads in Frankston. During this stage, the project team are undertaking investigations and assessments to determine what is technically feasible at each location. The government has just announced the signing of contracts with a consortium of contractors for the construction of the SkyTrain system on the Dandenong-Pakenham line, a decision which is coming to considerable criticism, especially by groups of locals and the opposition. Take a listen.
No one voted for SkyRail. Daniel Andrews, no one voted for this proposal before the election. Labor never told communities right across Melbourne that their way of eliminating level crossings was to put the track four stories in the air. That's what's going to happen up towards Mernda, down here past Murrumbina, along the Frankston line and other lines. Level crossings should be removed with the railway line going under the road, not the railway line being elevated four stories above. No one voted for that. Daniel Andrews does not have a mandate to wreck our suburbs like he wants to do here in Murrumbina.
While the opposition makes claim that the SkyTrain option was not identified as part of the level crossing solution in the 2014 election platform, it is clear that the government has left no option out of the mix when it comes to finding, in its view, the right solution to the problem. And if we want them to find the right solution, why would we have expected them to exclude any option for consideration? But the option for a SkyTrain on the Frankston line is not necessarily going to be the right solution, and the government is clearly aware of this. In a conversation I had this week, Mr. Bob Nielsen, the media manager for Jacinta Allen, who is the state manager for transport, who I couldn't contact at the time, and who was good enough to update me on the current situation as it was not possible to speak to Ms. Allen, he advised that the stations and crossings along the Frankston line and the lands on which they lay have very different aspects and variables to be taken into consideration in assessing the best removal solution. Therefore, the choice of a SkyTrain is not a certainty. He also indicated that the government was still in the appraisal period for the remaining eight crossings, and until those appraisals are completed, no decisions can be made about the best approach to remove them. It would therefore seem that to assume that the Frankston line will have a SkyTrain is in truth premature. What is clear is that the government has stated its intentions to have all crossings removed by late 2018, coincidentally, just before the state election. I'm Ray Reid for Eye on the Peninsula.
Ray Reid reports on the likelihood of a SkyTrain on the Frankston line. Deputy Leader of the Opposition and Shadow Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Development, the Honourable Tanya Plibersek, visited Frankston last Friday. She addressed the audience in support of Dunkley candidate Ms. Peter Murphy in the lead-up to the 2016 federal election. Deborah Maher caught up with the Shadow Minister to discuss areas of concern in the Dunkley electorate, which covers Mornington and Mount Eliza. We'll also hear from the Dunkley candidate in this report.
What areas are you lobbying for that will benefit the people in Frankston area and the Mornington Peninsula?
Well, it's great to be here to support our candidate, Peter Murphy. And of course, she, like all Labor candidates, will be focusing on health and education, a strong economy, jobs. I know that youth unemployment, for example, here is almost 11%. That's something that we really need to work very hard on, and the current government has actually cut more than 500 apprenticeships from this local community in the course of a year. The local health service is set to lose more than $700 million over the next 10 years based on the health cuts in the 2014 budget brought down by Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey, but the budget that Malcolm Turnbull and Scott Morrison are sticking to. So we want to work very hard to fund our schools properly. We've already said, of course, that we will fully fund the Gonski School Education Package. So health, education, jobs, that's what we're always about.
Rate capping imposed on councils and shires by the Victorian government is becoming increasingly difficult for local government to take on additional financial responsibilities to meet the needs of its constituents. She had this to say on the matter.
The Frankston City Council are having a little bit of difficulty with the state capping at 2.5%, and one of the issues, as you've already raised, is education and health. If they come to you to help, are you going to help them in those areas?
Well, the federal government has always had a very interesting relationship with local councils. When we were in government, we were very conscientious about making sure that local councils were funded by the federal government. The current federal government has actually frozen funding for local government, so there's been real pressure on councils. They've been trying to deal with that by putting up rates, and obviously here in Victoria the state government has a position on that where they're not allowing certain rate increases. That's really something between the state government and local councils. What we can do as a federal government is properly fund local government as we did when we were last in power.
And lastly, foreign investment and the introduction of the free trade agreement with China, Japan and South Korea, entered into by the Turnbull government, is making some people nervous on the Mornington Peninsula. Tanya Plibersek agreed it's hard to get the balance right between the number of foreign investors allowed to buy Australian land and assets and what's good for the nation.
With the free trade agreement and foreign investment, I noticed that Tim Pallas today said that they were going to tax more of foreign investment. Is that a good idea?
Well, I think, of course, Australia's always benefited from foreign investment, but like every country, we have the right to make sure that that foreign investment is in the national interest. Often it is in the national interest, but if it's not in the national interest, then we've got a right, like any other nation, to question that investment. It's very important as well, when you're talking about our tax system, to make sure that large companies are paying their fair share of tax, and that's something we've seen in Australia in recent years. We know that a substantial proportion of our very large multinational companies pay very little tax, and in some cases no tax at all. That's certainly something that we would fix in government.
There's a couple of people concerned in this area, and including the Mornington Peninsula, because there are a lot of foreign investors coming in and buying up small mum and dad businesses. Do you think that the Foreign Investment Review Board needs to be looked at and tougher rules and things be put in place?
Well, I think the existing rules certainly need to be properly enforced, and that's always the first step, making sure that the Foreign Investment Review Board is properly resourced and properly empowered to do the job that they're set up to do. Australia has always benefited from foreign investment, and if you're selling something, you want to get the best possible price for it. So we shouldn't ever be in a position where we're saying no to all foreign investment. We just need to make sure it's in the national interest.
Hard to get that balance, isn't it?
Yes, sometimes it is.
Tanya Plibersek was joined by Peter Murphy, ALP candidate for the federal electorate of Dunkley. Education and health are two important issues in Dunkley Ms Murphy will focus on if elected. She explained why.
Congratulations, ALP candidate for Dunkley, Peter Murphy. Firstly, what are you going to stand for in your new electorate before the election?
The most important things are making sure that our schools are properly funded and that every child, no matter where they come from, no matter which school they go to, has the opportunity for the best start in life. Something that I'm very passionate about, both because I grew up in a family of teachers, so education's always been the most important thing in our family, but also because professionally, having worked in the justice system for 16 years, it's fundamentally clear to me that the most important thing is schooling, to give kids opportunities no matter what their passions or skills or backgrounds are. Health is obviously a big issue in our electorate. Not only are health services one of the biggest employers in Dunkley, we have a population, particularly down in Mornington and parts of Mount Eliza, which is ageing. And we need to look at not just how we help people once they're sick, but what are very good preventative health programs. So I'm going to be passionately fighting to save Medicare. I know very well how important diagnostic imaging and pathology are, so I'm very concerned to make sure we don't get in a situation where the cuts to Medicare mean that people would need to pay out of pocket to have tests which can be life-saving.
Now, we know with the rate capping that's come in for shires and councils around the state, the Frankston City Council is having a little bit of an issue with a 2.5 rate capping, so they're going to have to get the money from other areas. Will you help them lobby for what you just spoke about, health and education and that sort of thing?
Just a no-brainer, really, that all levels of government need to work together and need to make sure that our resources are appropriately targeted. And one of the reasons I'm a member of the Labor Party and one of the reasons I'm so proud to be running in this election is that federally, you know, we've announced $37 billion worth of investment in schools across the country, which amounts to, in Dunkley alone in 2018 and 2019, $28 million of investment in schools. And it's that sort of investment which means that councils can then look at other ways that they can help with the services that they provide. And we need to work together.
Ms Murphy spoke about the SkyRail proposal along Bayside suburbs and exciting opportunities Frankston can offer for small businesses and investors.
When I'm out and about, as I am every day, talking to locals, I mean, the first thing is everyone is just so positive about getting rid of the level crossings. Those of us that have lived here for a long time know that Frankston, Seaford level crossings are not only dangerous, but they really are a hindrance to getting around. So people are very excited about that. And I think that as we are going through, I know the state government is conducting consultations to say, particularly up at Seaford, what will it look like? How will we replace the level crossing? And I'm always a huge advocate of taking the community with you where you go and getting the best outcome that we can. In Dunkley too, we have so many opportunities. Frankston's such a wonderful place for those of us who live here. And with the redevelopment of the train station and growing opportunities for investment, I think we're really at the precipice of an exciting time. And Frankston and Mornington in particular together can be just such a wonderful tourist destination as well as a great place to live.
Part of your portfolio will be small business, and there's a lot of investment happening in Frankston, not only with big businesses but small businesses. You're going to give them some sort of tax break and lobby?
I'm not in a position to announce Labor's policies, of course, as the candidate for Dunkley, but certainly I'm acutely aware of how important small business is to our electorate. I, as a barrister, have run my own small business, and my husband is a consultant, so we know what the burdens are, particularly of having to deal with things like the GST and capital flows. So I will certainly continue what I've been doing for many years, which is to talk to Frankston Business Network, the Mornington Chamber of Commerce, to make sure we're across the needs of our local businesses in particular.
Ms Murphy concluded with this.
If you do get in as member for Dunkley, what will be one of the first things that you focus on?
There's so many things. I'm so excited to have the opportunity to focus on, I have to say. Partly my first thing to do would be to sit down with those groups that we've just talked about and the local community groups. So the schools, the community groups, the businesses, the other levels of government, and be part of a team of saying, you know, let's really capitalise on the exciting things that are happening, like the train station redevelopment. And let's really promote all of these wonderful opportunities that we can. I'd be very excited, of course, to be part of a, hopefully, a federal Labor government that will be delivering the investment into the schools and the hospitals and into the local community groups so we can keep doing what we've been doing. We have an electorate in Dunkley. I'm not sure if you know this, but it's named after a woman called Louisa Dunkley, who was a campaigner for equal pay for women in the 1890s. Amazing back then for someone to stand up and say women need to be paid equally in the public service. She set up the Women's Telegraphers and Post Office Workers Association in Victoria and successfully got herself elected to a national conference and got equal pay for women in the Telegraph Office into the Commonwealth Public Service Act of 1902. We've never had a woman elected to represent Dunkley. So I would be very privileged and proud to be the first woman to represent this electorate and to be able to talk about all the things that matter to the community and in particular to women, so that we can have leadership in business, in sport, in community sector from men and equally from women.
Ms Murphy also addressed the audience last Friday and covered issues concerning gender pay and opportunities, the superannuation gap, and the work needed to do with industrial relations to facilitate an equitable workplace. Another interesting point to note is Ms Murphy could be the first woman in that federal electorate to be elected as the member of Dunkley, which was named after union leader and feminist Louisa Dunkley.
You're on RPP 98.7 and 98.3 on the peninsula.
While the 2.5% rate capping the Andrews government imposed on councils may look fair and reasonable on paper, stand by for a tough and tight budget from the Frankston City Council and the Mornington Peninsula Shire next month. The Andrews Labor government's Fair Go rate system is said to protect ratepayers from councils overspending, and Minister for Local Government Natalie Hutchins said the Fair Go rates cap will increase the transparency and accountability of councils across the state. But Eye on the Peninsula says, get ready for a slug on your next rate notice. Councils are crying poor and are not confident they can deliver the same level of services they have provided in the past. Over the past 5 years, additional costs carried by Frankston City ratepayers have included home and community care totalling $2 million, maternal and child health totalling $1.1 million, library services $1 million, and school crossing supervision another $500,000. It means ratepayers will pay higher costs for local services with cost shifting. Frankston City Council CEO Dennis Hovenden said, given that we are being asked to raise less through rates but deliver more, something has to give. The Frankston City Mayor's Office was contacted, but again, no one was available to comment. If you want to look at the draft budget 2016-17, it's now available to review by visiting frankston.vic.gov.au. And for the Mornington Peninsula Shire draft budget 2016-17, go to mornpen.vic.gov.au. A Imagine a local tourist destination where you could be up close and personal to a real submarine. That could be a reality. But there was a backlash from the people of Hastings as a community meeting held last Thursday when they heard of the millions of dollars needed to move Otama, a submarine currently resting in Western Port Bay. President of the Western Port Oberon Association and lobbyist Mr. Max Bryant was disappointed with the community's reaction. He said it's a lack of understanding from the community when it comes to carrying out such an operation and the costs associated with the move. Deborah Maher compiled this story.
Now, there was a bit of a backlash when we heard $10 to $15 million. So just talk us through that.
Yeah, that's right. It's a fairly expensive exercise once you start doing any excavation, you know, offshore. It's the spoil has to be retained, so you need a seawall. Again, a very expensive.
North wall came up tonight. Would that be feasible?
The north side of the wharf? No, definitely not.
And why is that?
It's a foreshore development plan which is set in concrete by state government, and there can be no increase in the footprint on the north side of the jetty, which means that we can't have any car parks, any museum, and the other issue is it's very shallow, so it requires a lot of dredging, and that spoil, because it's on the outside of the old Hastings tip, it would have to go to Altona and be burnt, so it's a very, very costly exercise.
Okay, it seems to be a bit of a quandary then, because to put it up where you want to, the wall has to be reinforced to actually set Altona up on land. With that $10 to $15 million funding for it, is there any way that you can bring that down maybe?
Well, as I said, the original estimate was $25 million, and we're shaving $10 million off it. We have the ability to build it in stages, which is three stages, which will lower the expenses, the initial funding up front. But the problem is, of course, the first stage, which is, requires all the seabed excavations and so forth, is the most expensive.
Now, we've got a small community down here in Hastings. There's a lot of people that can't foot that sort of bill. Who will you be lobbying now at the government level?
We've got a very good letter from the State Minister for Tourism, who's very anxious to come down and talk to us and have a look at the project. But also we're looking at funds from the private sector. There has been some initial discussions with Bendigo Bank, which are quite promising. So we're looking at a number of sources.
The history of Otama and her journey is very moving, and the people of Hastings are excited about having her on land to share with locals and tourists.
Why is Otama so special?
Well, she is the last one built in the world, the last of her class built in the world, and she was the last Oberon-class submarine to be decommissioned. And she served Australia very well during the Cold War. It was launched by Princess Anne, and Princess Anne came here in 2003 to see her submarine, and she's told us that she'd love to come back and open the facility once we get it up and running.
Shadow Minister for Small and Medium Enterprises Neil Burgess, Western Port Councillor David Garnock, and Mornington Peninsula Shire's CEO of Economic Development and Tourism Tanya Treasure were alarmed at the cost, but agreed that Otama will be good for the township of Hastings.
I'll go to you first, Neil. The question that was asked tonight, what sort of influences do you have? Are you going to go and push for this, and who are you going to put pressure on?
Well, I've actually already been writing to all of the ministers. Interesting that there's a letter from John Aaron, because I wrote to John Aaron and he said it's nothing to do with me and flicked it off to Lisa Neville. Lisa Neville then wrote to me and said, yeah, it might be a good project, we've got a lot of other priorities, and they used the $1 million that we committed elsewhere. So I will continue to put pressure on them. I speak in Parliament on it, and obviously, you know, they're very sensitive to the community's feelings, because they want to be elected next time. And if they come to the party and fund this, I'll be very supportive of it. But I'll continue to use every process we've got, petitions, speeches, letters, meetings, the whole lot, to get pressure on this government to make them cough up the money, as the previous government did.
$10 to $15 million is a lot of money. Where do you think that's going to come from?
To be honest with you, it's the first time I've heard that figure. Nothing like that. What we talked about many times was $2 to $2.5 million, and that's why we committed to $1 million, because we believed that we would put in the seed and that would encourage the other funders. So we had been told $2.5 million, and I know that David was in the same meetings as I was.
Well, we'll have to go to the bottom of that, I guess, where those millions are coming from. David, one of the question and answers tonight was, can the Shire help? And you said?
Well, certainly the Shire's behind this has always been right from the word go. And as I said, I'm ex-naval officer myself. I would love to see a submarine ashore in my hometown. And, of course, we are looking for tourist attractions which are not seasonal. The Shire will be limited in what it can contribute money, from a financial wise, because we are facing rate capping as of July this year. But we've said all along that we're happy to work with the Oberon Association to help them put together the applications for funding to assist with whatever administration they require to get the submarine ashore.
Well, that would be a good help. Now, Tanya, you spoke tonight about how much will bring tourism to Hastings. Could you just elaborate on that a little bit, please?
Just to further expand to Councillor Garnock's comment, that the project would bring enormous tourism benefits to the region and to the Mornington Peninsula region as well, and we're wholly supportive of the project.
As I said before, $10 to $12 million, but how many years would you anticipate tourism getting that money back?
Look, I'd like to see the business case that the Oberon Association has done to be able to provide an informed answer to that question.
The thing is, and David made the point very well early on, that our focus has always been about making sure that we actually get the submarine on shore. Because when you get it on shore, people can so easily see the benefits that it will deliver for this town. And it's critical for this town. You know, this town's been ignored in so many ways for so long. This needs to put it on the map, and it would.
Absolutely. Port of Hastings.
Absolutely. And I think, as you know, we put $110 million in it. We were right down the track, ready to go with it. The research had been done, and we'd pulled the trigger on it, basically. The new government came in, cancelled it straight away, and took $80 million out of Hastings and took it somewhere else. So we will keep on pushing. We fought them on their legislation. Their legislation was ruling out any second port in Victoria for 70 years. We fought them on that. We got it back to 15 years. And that Port of Hastings is one of the highest priorities for the Guy opposition, and it will be for the Guy government as well. But I think it's important that governments do invest in tourism. But it's about time this government invested in something in this community. I've watched every budget during the Brax and the Brumby governments. Virtually nothing came into this community. During the 4 years we're in government, we put in literally hundreds of millions of dollars. Now it's dried up again straight away, and it's just time they really got together and started to work for this community.
Over 100 locals attended the community meeting last week, and some had this to say.
The question is, why the interest for Hastings community to have the Otama out of the water and on dry land for people to see?
Because it's kitschy and it's quirky, and Hastings people respond to that. And if they like a project, they'll give you the manpower, they'll give you the hours, they'll give you the commitment, they'll talk it up and they'll get it happening. There's a lot of need in the community, and there's a lot of people that respond to that with, you know, time and effort. I believe it's something that would enhance Hastings. It certainly will give people a reason to come here, but for the locals, it's really pride of place, and it's something that I believe all ages can get involved in. I think it'll be an attraction for everyone.
My feelings on it are that I would dearly love it to come into Hastings, just so we're not only seeing it just visually in the distance, but seeing it up close as well. It's been in that water for a long time, so I think Hastings needs it to come into our harbour. The education side of it, I thought of, because the children round here, although they might see it in the distance if they go out to the end of the pier, they do not know anything about the submarine. So I think the education side of it is very important, and that's another reason why I feel as though it should come into the town.
Kids have a bit of a fascination with Navy and all things like that. Maybe that's going to be a draw card.
Especially with Cerberus here as well.
Well, tourism is a huge part of the Western Port region, or should I say, should be a huge part. I mean, we've got such a strong manufacturing base, but every time there's an economic downturn, the manufacturing base always has a tendency to collapse, and there's no certainty for the economic prosperity of the region. So I think having a major tourist attraction in the Western Port region is such a huge deal. It's a huge deal because we need stability. It's a huge deal because there is not a lot down here for young people to do. I am only 25 years of age, and I actually remember taking a day off of school to go and see Princess Anne at the Cenotaph on October the 17th, 2003. Everyone lined up, and there would have been a couple of thousand people there. Some would say just to see Princess Anne, but I would say it was actually more for the submarine, and I just think that's the way forward.
So tonight we heard that it was going to cost between $10 to $15 million to get it up for tourism. Where are we going to get that sort of money from?
Well, I'm not sure where the money's going to come from, but having said that, just tonight we heard about the Penguin Parade down at Phillip Island receiving $55 to $60 million. If they can find that sort of money for an existing project, surely a fraction of that can be found for a new project to create a whole new set of opportunities for the region.
I've been part of the project for a long time. I'd love to see it because it would bring more jobs into the town, keep the shops open, stop the vandalism from happening in the main streets, give kids something to do, help all the local communities around the area. I think it'd be ideal.
Get behind the Otama submarine project and the people who believed that she will not only give Hastings an economic boost, it will educate people, young and old, about an important part of our maritime history. Well, that's it for another week on Eye on the Peninsula. If you have any news from the street, please contact the RLP radio station on 5975 1234. Next week, Eye on the Peninsula will again bring you up to date with issues that matter to you. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 FM or 98.3 FM Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rppfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website. I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from RPPFM in Mornington. Thanks for listening.